Kia ora and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 230. Today is Monday, August 16, 2010. Yes, it's Monday, and I am podcasting, which is mainly because I don't know how this week is going to turn out, and so I thought I'd just start early this week rather than waiting for my normal schedule, whatever that is. So we'll see how we go. I might get two episodes in this week, might even get three, you just don't know. Well, today I'm going to tell you about some things in the New Zealand news. They are letting any old riffraff live in New Zealand nowadays, and almost American style to the New Zealand income tax law has been proposed. American style climate change deniers are grandstanding. Those liquor laws I told you about may yet still change, and the local elections are coming, and there's some important deadlines about that. Today's title is unusual, crazed man posits, and it's actually derived from a little internet fad. And it started, I don't know where it started, but I'll blame Daniel Brewer because he's the one I saw doing it. On Twitter, he was posting the names of various podcasts, or rather anagrams of names of various podcasts. And so I went and did anagrams of Amarin's podcast, and among others was Crazy Man Posit. And since at some point or other during this episode I'm bound to posit something or other, and because there are plenty of people who believe I'm a crazed man, why not just call it Crazed Man Posits? So there you go. That's why this really strange title. There were a lot of humorous anagrams of that, but I'm not going to take up time talking about those. But that doesn't mean that I won't in the future. Because, you know, sometimes you just run out of material, don't you? But back to the news, or into the news, or whatever. I mentioned in a previous episode how Richard O'Brien, who's best known as Riff Raff from the Rocky Horror Show, was denied residency in New Zealand. He's 68 years old, which is, generally speaking, too old for an immigrant. And he was born in Britain and brought to New Zealand when he was about 9 or 10 years old and left about 13 years later. Now, in the interim, he lived in Tauranga for a number of years and then ultimately in Hamilton. And in Hamilton, he worked in a barber shop. And when that was torn down some years later, but in the past few years, I can't remember exactly when it was, they put a statue of O'Brien as Riff Raff on the spot where the barbershop used to stand. And you can still see it. It's obviously still there. And so New Zealand thinks rather a lot of him because he got the idea for the Rocky Horror Show while living here in New Zealand and looking at old movies. Going to see old movies. And he's got relatives here. His parents lived here until they died. And he wants to come home. But because he was considered too old, the authorities, just going by the letter of the law, weren't allowing him in. Well, he's been given a special waiver under the circumstances, and he will be allowed to settle in New Zealand and ultimately possibly get New Zealand citizenship. But this is a small issue because starting November 2nd, he's going to be in the Rocky Horror Show here in Auckland. The London cast is going to be doing their show, and he is going to be performing the role of the narrator, which is kind of interesting in itself, I suppose. But, so that starts August 2nd here in Auckland. But he is now officially going to be allowed to come into New Zealand. And there were some 3,500 people on the Facebook group to allow him into New Zealand. Nigel was one of them. I never joined it because I don't bother going on Facebook anymore. So. But anyway, I'm glad to see that because I actually think he would be a good addition to New Zealand. There also in the news today, there has been a proposal to put in what they're calling income splitting for tax purposes. Now, this has long been a proposal of a mildly conservative party called United Future, and its leader has campaigned on this for the past several elections. And was in coalition with Labour, and now he's in coalition with the national government. And part of their agreement was that they would support it to the committee stage, government would support it to the committee stage, and then after that it's on its own. Well, in New Zealand, all taxpayers are taxed individually. We don't have any married filing jointly, for instance, which of course is one of the issues with same-sex marriage in the United States, because even couples who are legally married in the states where it's permitted can't file joint federal income tax forms, and that often penalizes them. Well, in New Zealand, that's never been an issue because everyone files as an individual. And their proposal is to allow couples with children under 18 to pool their income and split it evenly so that what it would mean is that the higher income spouse would end up at a lower tax rate. And the argument has been that this would benefit primarily wealthy people where the other parent stays at home because they'd be on a high wage and they could get it down to a much lower tax level. And it's also been suggested that this is a way of encouraging one of the partners to stay at home. However, one of the things that is interesting about this is that it is really quite open, because it would allow families which are defined as married or couples in a civil union or de facto relationship with children up to 18 years old, that they could combine their incomes to split them for tax purposes. But de facto are unmarried couples who are living together. And after 3 years, they're considered to be in a relationship, and the Relationship Properties Act then enters into it, and they have to split their assets 50-50 if they split up. So it's kind of like being married, but without the, you know, the pieces of paper, or in a civil union, but without the pieces of paper. Civil union is the next step up, and it's basically very similar to marriage. But it, when he was proposing this before, because his party was formed out of the ashes of a failed Christianist party. Now, I said before that no Christianist party has ever won a seat in parliament since the age of MMP began in 1996. And that's certainly true. But one of the parties that used to exist was called Future New Zealand. And it had, before that, had been the Christian Democrats. And they had had an MP, a former national MP, who quit the national party just before the 96 elections and was supposedly a Christian Democrat. Well, he formed a coalition for the 96 elections with the leader of the Christian Heritage Party, and they called themselves the Christian Coalition. Now, the leader of the Christian Heritage Party is now in prison for child molestation. He molested a 14-year-old girl, I think she was 14, 12, 14, somewhere in there anyway. And, of course, he claims it was a consensual relationship, and to this day he says there was nothing wrong with it. But Christian Heritage Party outlasted the Christian Democrats, who tried to morph into they were always more moderate than Christian Heritage, but they tried to morph into Future New Zealand. And then when they still couldn't get anywhere in the electorate, they just disbanded. Well, technically they merged with the United Party, which was originally meant to be a sort of pan-European, a pan-New Zealand party. In other words, uniting all these different groups, immigrants, Māori, Pacific Islanders, whatever, into one broad-based party. Well, it never quite happened that way, and they continue to decline, and right now they only have one member in parliament, and that's the leader, and he's the one who's behind this bill. And in the previous years, they have had people supporting them who were pretty right-wing, because they were formed from this merger of this ex-Christian party and themselves. Some of the people in their caucus were right-wing Christians, and they voted against the Civil Union Act, for instance. And so I was really suspicious about this thing coming forward, what they were going to do, that they were going to limit it only to married couples, which would have created all kinds of legal problems, because that would have violated the Human Rights Act. And I don't actually think they could have gotten away with that unless they passed a special exemption or something, which would have been even more problematic. Well, the New Zealand Labour Party, which is the official opposition party, is opposed to it, and others are as well. So I don't think this is really going to go anywhere. But what I thought was interesting about it wasn't so much this proposal, but just the fact that it was a proposal that reflected New Zealand values, which is that all families matter. And I think that's one of the things you can say that is quite different about New Zealand, because I just can't imagine a proposal like that ever being put before Congress. But of course, Congress already has married filing jointly and all that, which New Zealand doesn't. But speaking of American-style politics, more specifically, we, of course, have our own share of climate change deniers, the people who say it's a myth, it's a hoax, it's all kinds of other things. And they try to wrap themselves in a veneer of respectability by claiming science when they're actually, more often than not, spouting pseudoscience. But one of the things that they've done is they've filed a court challenge to NIWA, which is our National Institute of I don't know what it is. Hang on a second. I think I've still got the article up on my keyboard here to tell you what it stands for. National Institute of Water and Atmospheric Research. Why is that not a NIWAR? Anyway, over temperature data. The trend shows a clear warming of New Zealand's temperatures over the past 100, 150 years. And the climate change deniers say that it's nonsense and that it is that it should be thrown out. Well, the reality is that it's not actually the temperatures that they are upset about, but modifications that have been made to the temperatures to correct for things like measuring differences and so on, which is an accepted scientific principle. And NIWA, of course, says, look, if you people are so clever and have so many scientists on board, why don't you do your own models? Because all of the temperature data that this is based on is freely available online. And they can go and get the temperature data. They can run their own models if they want to see what it's doing. And, of course, they haven't done that. I think it's because they don't have any real scientists. But, hey, that's just me. Anyway, so it seems to me that this lawsuit is on the frivolous side, and what they're really doing is grandstanding on the issue to try to get attention for themselves. One of the part of the coalition is the Neoconservative ACT Party, which is the farthest right party in Parliament at the moment. And as it stands right now, if the national elections were held now, ACT would cease to exist. They wouldn't have any representation in Parliament, and they know that. And they need to try to raise their profile, and they think that this is one way to do it. Unfortunately, they've hitched their wagons to the lunatic side of the spectrum, and I'm not entirely sure that that's going to get them any support. I mean, the lunatic fringe in New Zealand on either end of the spectrum, left or right, is really small. Although on the right, it's probably there's probably more people who are left-wing than right-wing, generally speaking, anyway. But so they're chasing nothing. They're not chasing any votes. The votes, as it is in most developed democracies, is in the center. The votes are in the center, and they're not chasing those. So it'll be interesting to see what ultimately happens with that, but I suspect they're probably not going to get anywhere because since the data is freely available, they're more than welcome to take the data, run it through their own models, and come up with their own different conclusions, assuming that they can or have that ability. And suing NIWA isn't a terribly relevant thing to do. Now, again, on a subject I've talked about before, the liquor laws in New Zealand. I had mentioned how some people weren't happy with the fact that they hadn't lowered the blood alcohol limit for adults. Well, there's been some development on that. There has been a lot of pressure from the media about this issue. Media is sort of, quite frankly, manufacturing an issue, if we're honest. And the Salvation Army has staged a rally against this. Because when I saw that on the news last night, I said to Nigel, I said, they had a rally about that. Don't they have more important things to worry about? But of course, it is quite devastating in some communities where there's a bottle shop, which what we call a liquor store, you know, on every block practically. But the Prime Minister was on the breakfast program on TVNZ this morning, and I actually really completely agree with him. He said that there are people in New Zealand who are drinking quite responsibly, you know, that the problem isn't with the majority of New Zealanders because this is his actual quote. A lot of people drink and they drink moderately and sensibly, and it's fine, but this is about tackling harm. Now, what he sees as harm is the fact that kids from 13 to 15 are managing to get alcohol. And those who are legal, say 18 to 24, are binge drinking and they're getting into all sorts of trouble while they're doing it. So the problem isn't alcohol in general, it's specific parts of it. Plus, New Zealand has long been criticized for having a binge drinking culture. And what the Prime Minister is saying, and I think he's right about this, is you don't tackle those issues necessarily through a broad-based law. You come up with something to target the specific problems. And I actually think he's right about that. Just cutting back the hours, cutting back the number of bottle shops, raising the excise tax, all those sorts of things, oven by themselves aren't going to tackle any of those issues. Take the 13 to 15-year-olds, for instance. Where are they getting the alcohol from? Somebody's buying it for them because they clearly wouldn't be looking old enough when they go into a store. And so that's one of the things that they could tackle. Not that I'm telling the government what to do, although I'm certainly not above doing that. Now, the final thing I wanted to tell you about today was that the local elections are coming up fast, and there's some important deadlines on Friday of this week. Now, the local elections I have talked about in various ways in the past, not necessarily in one whole episode, but there are two deadlines that come up this week on Friday. The first is voter registration rolls close on Friday. And anybody living in New Zealand is, of course, a permanent resident or citizen is required to register to vote. It's not an option. And although the fines are really quite low, nevertheless, it is required. As a matter of fact, when you get a residence permit, one of the things they hand you is a voter registration form for you to fill out and return. And whenever you move, you have to re-register and all that sort of stuff. But it's very easy to do. You can text your details to a particular number. You can go to the website, elections.org.nz. You can go to a post shop. You can do all sorts of things. It's really easy to register to vote in New Zealand. And funnily enough, we don't have voter fraud or voter registration fraud. I wonder why that is. Probably because it's so easy. Oh, I'm being cynical. I'm sorry. But the rolls do close on Friday. And the reason for that is so that they have time to get everything in there and verified and publish the roll in time for the elections, which are actually in October. And so they don't have a whole lot of time to get it sorted. And that's why they do it. But Friday is also the deadline for the nomination for anybody who wants to run for office in New Zealand in the local elections. Now, local elections are made up of local government or whatever is typically made up of a mayor of the town. It will have a council of some sort, and it may have local boards. Now, the reason I'm being a bit vague about that and a big may have, may not have, is because they're all a bit different. There's cities like Auckland or Hamilton or Wellington or what have you. And then there are also districts like we used to live in the Hauraki district, which Pāroa is part of. And, of course, there are regional councils as well that are similar in some respects to provinces, although we don't have provinces. They're probably more directly analogous to like counties in an American state. And the regional councils are responsible for environmental stuff primarily, and the local councils are responsible for pretty much everything else, roads and rubbish and water and parks and stuff like that. Remember that in New Zealand, schools, education, police, and fire are all the responsibility of the central government in Wellington. It has nothing to do with local government. They don't spend money on it. They're not responsible for building new stations or the personnel levels or any of that stuff. All of that comes out of Wellington ultimately, although schools do often raise money on their own for extras that the government doesn't fund. That sort of thing doesn't typically happen with the fire and police, but it is, as I say, not a local concern. But in Auckland in particular, we're having a very big change, as I've talked about before, because we are now merging into one city. There are eight local councils, eight local governments ruling what is now Auckland. All of those councils are going to be merged into one new one called Auckland Council, which will be responsible for roughly a quarter of the country's population, rising to a third fairly quickly, as it looks, if current population projections are accurate. It generates a huge amount of the economic activity in the country because of the ports of Auckland, and also the main airport is located here, all those sorts of things. And it will be a very big deal. It's roughly 100 kilometers from the south end to the north end. And on a good day, it will take you over an hour to drive that. On a bad day, it could take you 2 or 3 hours, well, probably more like 2 hours to drive that when, you know, traffic is really bad. So we're talking about a massive area for Auckland in particular. But at 1.4 million people-ish, it's still small by world city standards. I mean, I moved here from Chicago, which had roughly 2.8 million people at the time, which is twice the size of Auckland's population. Although, I think it might be in a smaller geographic area. I should compare areas sometime. At any rate, but it matters. It really dominates New Zealand in a way that most cities don't dominate the countries they're in, or I should say will dominate, because most countries don't have a city that accounts for an entire quarter of their population. Now, granted, we're a small country, so it's easier to do, but it still is a very big deal. It's a very big change. We're going to have one mayor who's going to be in charge of the city, basically, and although he will not be called a Lord Mayor, which is interesting. We have no Lord Mayors in New Zealand. Other cities do in the Commonwealth, but we don't. So anyway, he'll just be mayor. And there will also be a Auckland Council, which will be with members elected from wards around the city. Originally, the proposal was to have them all elected at large, but that got shot down because that would benefit only the rich and the powerful and would marginalize everyone else. And in our particular ward, we're going to have two councillors. Now, I don't know why some of them are two and some of them have one. I would have thought it would have made more sense to have all of them single member, but they didn't ask me, did they? Well, actually, they did, and I didn't make a submission, but anyway, not me personally. I mean, they asked everybody. And under that will be these community boards, and I can't, that's not what they're called, and I cannot remember what they're actually called. But it's uncertain what powers they're going to have. The thing is that once the new Auckland Council actually comes into being in November, they can then delegate powers to these local boards, whatever they're called. And they will probably have responsibility for things like determining where new bus stops go, for instance, and stuff like that, and making requests of council for relatively local expenditures, like maybe adding a playground to a park or something. I don't know. Whether or not the Auckland Council actually follows up on any of those things, I don't know, and it'll depend on how binding they make those requests, you know, those sorts of things. All of this is remaining to be determined. There's a lot that's up in the air. The only thing we know for certain is that the new mayor will have a lot of power. He'll be the most powerful. He will be, certainly, will be the most powerful mayor in Auckland. He will be responsible for the biggest municipal government in Australasia, which is Australia and New Zealand. And he will be the arguably, well, at least the second most powerful politician in New Zealand, and in some ways arguably more powerful than the prime minister, except that he doesn't have an army at his disposal. But it'll clearly be the second most coveted political job in New Zealand, next to prime minister. And we have a lot of diverse candidates running. I'm not going to get into that for a variety of reasons. But it's such a huge change, a huge upheaval. I really hope that my fellow Aucklanders do get themselves registered and get their ballots done. Now, of course, in New Zealand, all the local body elections are done by postal ballot. We don't actually go and vote in person. And the voter return rates are usually pretty decent. They're not as high as when people have to vote in person, which is kind of odd if you stop to think about it. But I'm hoping that this year it's going to be particularly big. Now, I actually did a post earlier in the month, about a week ago, about standing for election in New Zealand. And if I remember, I'll put a link in the show notes. But the important thing about that, there's just a few points that I'll mention. And these are direct quotes from local government in New Zealand from a booklet they put out that was called Making a Stand. Sorry, my post is called Taking a Stand. And these are the qualifications for running for local office in New Zealand. You must be a New Zealand citizen and enrolled in the parliamentary electoral roll anywhere in New Zealand, and have lived at your current address for at least 1 month. You do not need to live in the area where you wish to stand. So that means, for instance, I could run for Christchurch City Council, for instance. I don't live there, but that doesn't matter because I'm a New Zealand citizen, I'm on the parliamentary electoral roll, and I've lived at my current address for more than a month. So I would qualify. Now, to actually get on the ballot, it's a little bit more involved. You will need two people to nominate you on the official nomination form and send your completed form to the electoral officer for your local council. They mean the local council you want to run in. You must consent to your nomination going forward by signing the nomination form, and you cannot nominate yourself. Those who nominate you must be over 18 years old and enrolled to vote in the area you wish to stand in. When you send in the nomination form, you will need to pay a $200, including GST, deposit. Okay, stopping there for a minute. What that means is that if I wanted to run in Christchurch, two voters registered in Christchurch who are 18 years and old or older would have to nominate me, and I couldn't nominate myself. But I could still run in Christchurch if I could find two people to do that. It goes on, the deposit may be refunded depending on how many votes you receive in the election and the particular type of election. The deposit is refunded if the number of votes you receive is greater than 25% of the lowest successful candidate for that particular election, for first past the post elections, or greater than 25% of the final quota as determined in the last iteration for single transferable vote elections. I have no bloody idea what that means. However, what is interesting about that is you will note there's two different type of elections used for local elections in New Zealand. First past the post, which is what's used in America, where whoever gets the most votes wins, even if it's only, say, 40% or whatever, because of all of the candidates running. But the other system that's using is single transferable vote, which is the same as is used in parts of Australia, part of the parliamentary elections for Australia. And in the U.S., it's often called instant runoff voting. It's a very similar system to that. And that's used primarily for district health boards, which run the hospitals and all the other various health stuff in geographic regions. But I believe that some local councils are also now using single transferable vote. The previous Labor-led government gave them the option to do that if they wanted to, and some have taken it up. But it is not used in Auckland, and it isn't used in most of the local governments in New Zealand because most Kiwis don't understand it. However, I talked about this before, there's going to be a referendum on New Zealand's voting system at the next general election, which is next year. And I'll be talking about that more in the time ahead, but it's entirely possible that single transferable vote may become the voting system in New Zealand down the road. We just don't know these things. We just don't know. So anyway, those are two important deadlines that are coming up the end of this week that I wanted to mention, and I know that I have some Kiwi listeners, and I hope that they will take the time to make sure that their registration details are up to date, because it is important. Now I'm going to go on to comments. And the first comment is from Emrens 228, Busy New Zealand, and it's from Roger Green, who said, "You know that when the other gets in trouble, it still does reflect on the whole, at least in the minds of some who are already hardwired to think that way. I can't help but to notice that the two powerful Democrats in the U.S. House now in trouble are both black. My cynical side says that others have noticed that fact and will exploit it, perhaps subtly." Thank you, Roger, and I actually think you're completely right about that on both points. With respect to the two Democrats, I did notice that they were both black, which of course made me raise an eyebrow instantly. I think at the very least that if it's not overt racism, there's at least a subtle racism at play, because they are paying far more attention to these two Democrats, black Democrats, than they are to white Republicans who have done things that are demonstrably worse. And there's at the very least some sort of double standard going on here. We can argue about what the specific motivation is, but something just isn't right about it all. That's what I'm trying to say. And I suspect that race is playing a role, but I can't prove that, obviously. But it does. I am suspicious of the whole thing. It smells, is what I'm saying. But with respect to the first part, that was exactly the point I was trying to make, that Chris Carter doing all of the rubbish that he did sort of reflect badly on gay people in New Zealand generally. And I would have hoped that as the first openly gay MP in New Zealand, he would have had more sense than to bring the entire community into disrepute through his actions. But, you just can't you can't make people do the right thing. And next up, we have the comments from Emrens 229, Live, Politics, and More. That, of course, was a live podcast I did on pride48.com. Honey from My Honey Wears Plaid couldn't do his live show last week. He and the boyfriend were off touring wineries. And so I stepped in and took it over. It was the first time I'd done a live show apart from the Pride 48 marathon in months, which was kind of interesting. But joining me were Turniphead from the Canadia and Daniel Brewer of many different shows. I always forget what he's part of. He's part of Walkahol and Live It Up, actually. But we had a sort of wide-ranging discussion that day. And Larkin left a comment that said, "Mr. Daniel, the doctor's kid, since when did they start using antibiotics to treat the flu, which is caused by viruses? Doctors may prescribe them, but they don't do anything but cause antibiotic resistance in this case." And Daniel responded, "Larkin, you are correct. I should have said strep throat instead of flu." Thank you, boys. And I was actually thinking the same thing when Daniel was saying that, but I thought, well, no, I'm not going to bring that up. And of course, we quickly went on to other topics. But it is true, actually. Prescribing antibiotics for a virus will do no good whatsoever and actually could do more harm than good. But it actually raises that the whole Lyme thing actually raises something I wanted to talk about briefly. And that is that I have to admit that I've been seriously considering lately whether or not I should continue on with this whole podcasting thing. Because my numbers, quite frankly, they've never been big. And it's like a cardinal sin. You're never supposed to talk about numbers in podcasting, about download numbers. But they have been declining in recent months. Now, when I talk about numbers, I'm talking about the initial downloads, because those tell you who the hardcore listeners are, for lack of a better term, or how many you've got, I should say. Not who, but how many. Because those are the people who subscribe automatically through iTunes. And you can expect some variation, say, if you release a podcast just before a holiday weekend, for instance, people don't sync their iPods or their iTunes. And so you tend not to have quite as many. But in a normal course of events, mine have been just generally and slowly declining. More than a year ago now, after the Pride 48 marathon, my numbers went up really pretty dramatically for me. It's still much smaller than any of these people that I talk about or talk with on the interwebs. But for me, they were really quite good. And then they've been slowly declining. Well, ever since I stopped doing the live shows, basically, they've been steadily but slowly declining. And it got to the point where I seriously thought, is it even worth doing it anymore if the numbers continue to go down? And I thought about what I could do to rejig the show. And I thought, well, maybe I could use my old feed, which is still available on Podomatic, for a different kind of show. So I could split the topics just as I split off Too Political from this one. And I thought, no, I don't really want to do another podcast. And I was trying to come up with options. I thought, well, I know that there's ways of tagging the enclosures so that people can subscribe to certain things. And I thought maybe I should look into that. And, well, I haven't gotten around to any of that yet. And, of course, the long-term numbers are still respectable. If, you know, if you wait a week or two, they start to get back to the normal numbers. But I thought about it. But then I also realized that I still, to this day, no matter what the numbers are, it's still significantly higher than the initial page loads I get on any blog post that I do. And by the logic of numbers alone, I should stop blogging and continue podcasting. And, of course, I'm not going to do that either. And I have to admit that today I was cheered when I checked my email and I got an email from Brother Sinatus. Well, I don't think it's unfair to say that, basically thanking me for doing the podcasts. And that's the sort of thing that actually makes it worthwhile. And I have mentioned this before, but I want to mention it again. If you have a favorite podcast, and no, I'm not soliciting for myself, if you have a favorite podcast, by all means tell them. It could be a comment, it could be an email, it could be a phone message, whatever you feel comfortable doing, a Twitter thing if they're on Twitter. But it matters to podcasters to get a little encouragement from time to time. It doesn't take much, it's not expensive, but it is something that you can do that will make them feel better about doing it. Because all of these podcasts that I interact with and that I talk about, even the ones that I link to for the most part, are all individuals who are doing it because they love doing it or they get something personal out of it. But no matter how much you love doing it, there comes a point where you think, is it really worth it? Am I I'm not making a difference exactly, but am I getting enough of a thing for me to justify continuing on? Now, in my case, I do, and I have, and I will. But there are plenty of others who from time to time go through the same feeling of wondering if it's even worth doing it anymore. So I strongly encourage you, if you have podcasts that you enjoy listening to let the producers know and to give them that sort of encouragement, because it really does make a difference. Oh, that's my little preaching for today. But as I say, I'm not quitting, at least not yet. I have a few more particular topics that I want to do, a few more things I want to do with the podcast yet, so I've got a long time to run as far as I can see. I do want to resume videos, but I haven't been able to get to that for a variety of reasons. We'll see. And of course, I'm also going to continue blogging too. Not that that's not the topic here precisely, but I will continue on. However, I would actually like to get back to doing live shows again, but I just haven't quite gotten my head around how to do that, because just as with the 229 live episode, the topics really aren't relevant to my podcast overall. And because, I mean, I'm talking primarily about American politics or American stuff, although I often bring New Zealand into it, it's not really terribly relevant to this podcast. So I'm not sure if I should, God forbid, have a separate one for that, or if I should pursue that tagging thing I was talking about, or what I should do. So until I figure that out, I'm not going to be doing a live show, but that's ultimately part of my plan. And I'm also going to be doing more to try to help Pride 48 grow and expand and develop and be all that it can be, because I think it is a tremendous resource, or potentially a tremendous resource for the community overall, and I really want to help that grow. That's it for today. I'm not going to do a musical outro today, partly because I'm too lazy to find one. So that's it for today. I hope to be back once or twice this week, but when I'm back, I'm back. Talk to you later. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.